Okay.
Ezekiel 40. In the 25th year of our captivity, in the beginning of the year, in the 10th day of the month, in the 14th year, after that the city was smitten, in the selfsame day, the hand of Yahweh was upon me and brought me thither. In the vision of Yahweh brought he me into the land of Israel and set me upon a very high mountain by which was as the frame of a city on the south. And he brought me thither, and behold, there was a man whose appearance was like the appearance of brass, with a line of flax in his hand, and a measuring reed, and he stood in the gate. And the man said unto me, Son of man, behold with thine eyes, and hear with thine ears, and set thine heart upon all that I shall show thee. For to the intent that I might show them unto thee art thou brought hither. Declare all that thou seest to the house of Israel. And behold, a wall on the outside of the house round about, and in the man's hand a measuring reed of 6 cubits long by the cubits and the hand breadth. So he measured the breadth of the building, 1 reed, and the height, 1 reed. Then came he unto the gate which looketh toward the east, and he went up the stairs thereof, and measured the threshold of the gate, which was 1 reed broad, and the other threshold of the gate, which was 1 reed broad. And every little chamber was 1 reed long and 1 reed broad. And between the little chambers were 5 cubits, and the threshold of the gate by the porch of the gate within was 1 reed. He measured also the porch of the gate within 1 reed. Then measured he the porch of the gate 8 cubits, and the post thereof 2 cubits, and the porch of the gate was inward.
User entered your channel.
And the little chambers of the gate eastward were 3 on this side and 3 on that side. They 3 were of 1 measure. And the post had 1 measure on this side and on that side. End of verse 10.
I don't think there's much. I mean, I could comment on Ezekiel's temple in general. I had already done so in my Revelation presentation. In the very last portion of it, in part 28, that was titled The Living Temple, I commented on this temple by Ezekiel, which Ezekiel describes in these last 9 chapters. And I believe that the entire temple is an allegory, and we will see that more specifically in Ezekiel chapter 43. We'll see evidence of that. This temple was never built. I can't really explain why it goes into so much detail for a temple that was never built. Except, as I said in my Revelation commentary, that the plan of Ezekiel's temple is made in order to shame the children of Israel for their sins. And I would really like to talk about that more when we get to Ezekiel chapter 43. But this temple was never built. It's nothing like Zerubbabel's temple. It's nothing like Solomon's temple. Zerubbabel's temple was much smaller than this temple. Now, let's imagine, because it can be established in the text, that Ezekiel wrote these words some short time after the destruction of Solomon's temple in 586 BC. And that can be established in the text of Ezekiel that Jerusalem is already destroyed. And now Ezekiel is laying out this depiction of this temple that never existed in history. It's never, ever been built, but yet it goes into great detail about the descriptions and what it's going to contain. Even with that great detail, that there are many significant features of Solomon's temple that are not found in Ezekiel's temple. And those significant features are important to the religion of the Old Testament, but they're not here. Okay, there's no Ark of the Covenant, that there is no veil separating or distinguishing the Holy of Holies, there's no showbread, that there's no golden lampstand, there's no laver of brass where the priests wash their hands before they made a sacrifice. So there's significant aspects of this temple, of Solomon's temple, that are not found in Ezekiel's temple. And therefore, it can be said that Ezekiel's temple doesn't quite represent the ritualistic
microphone muted
practices of Solomon's temple. It just doesn't. So what does it represent? And it seems to me that this temple was never built, but rather this description was only given to shame the children of Israel. In the New Testament, Christ is the temple. And Christ made explicit statements describing himself as the temple of God. And Christ is the temple that would be planted, the tabernacle that would be planted among the children of Israel, as it's described at the end of Ezekiel chapter 37. So it may not be possible for us to know what all of these measurements mean. And all that I could surmise now from text in Ezekiel chapter 43, statements in Ezekiel 43 and in Ezekiel chapters 47 and 48, that this temple is being described in this manner only to shame the children of Israel for their sins. And that is relevant before the time of Christ, but it's not as relevant after the time of Christ, except for us to look back at it and garner some lesson from it. And that's all I could know about this temple with the information I have. I mean, maybe somebody else could do better than me, but I'll describe it more when we get to the relevant chapters.
So how would it be shaming the community of Israel?
Because it's a challenge for them to repent and they could have this land back and they could have this temple. And evidently they never repented.
So in verse 5, it says, so he measured the breadth of the building, one reed, and the height, one reed. So the height and the width were one reed, which was 6 cubits in a hand.
Okay.
Be like some, you know, what about like a little less than 20 feet?
How much was the reed? How much was the reed? Was it 6 cubits in a hand? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
That must have been like the building that might have been in one of the corners or something, right? 20 feet by 20 feet?
A wall on the outside of the house roundabout and a man's hand, a measuring reed of 6 cubits long by the cubit and a hand. Well, 6 cubits by the cubit and a hand. It's not 6 cubits and a hand. It's a cubit and a hand. And that's the difference between the standard cubit and what some writers call the royal cubit, where the standard cubit is like 18 and a half inches and the royal cubit is like 21 inches, I think, or something like that. That's the difference.
Okay,
so I think it's 21 inches.
So it's even smaller.
I'm sorry?
So it's even smaller. So it's more like 12 foot?
Well, it would be 18 inches, and maybe a hand is like usually counted as 4 inches. So 22 inches, six times, yeah, would be like 11 point something feet. But that's a wall on the outside of the house. And how is the house described? It's not really described yet.
Okay. Should I continue on?
Go ahead.
Verse 11, and he measured the breadth of the entry of the gate, 10 cubits, and the length of the gate, 13 cubits. Space also before the little chambers was 1 cubit on the side, and the space was 1 cubit on that side. And the little chambers were 6 cubits on the side, and 6 cubits on that side. He measured then the gate from the roof of one little chamber to the roof of another. The breadth was 5 and 20 cubits, door against door. He made also posts of 60 cubits, even unto the post of the court round about the gate. And from the face of the gate of the entrance unto the face of the porch of the inner gate were 50 cubits. And there were narrow windows to the little chambers and to their post within the gate round about, and likewise to the arches and windows were round about inward. And upon each post were palm trees. Then brought he me into the outward court, and lo, there were chambers and a pavement made for the court round about. 30 chambers were upon the pavement. And the pavement by the side of the gates, over against the length of the gates, was the lower pavement. Then he measured the breadth from the forefront of the lower gate unto the forefront of the inner court without, and 100 cubits eastward and northward. And the gate of the outward court that looked toward the north, he measured the length thereof and the breadth thereof. And the little chambers thereof were 3 on this side and 3 on that side. And the posts thereof and the arches thereof were after measure of the first gate. The length thereof was 50 cubits, and the breadth 5 and 20 cubits. End of verse 21.
I just don't know how constructive it is or how useful it is to try to describe this in words beyond this so that we could build a model of what it looks like. I've seen various models on paper of Ezekiel's temple, and I thought that they were all a little off or subject to interpretation. I don't know how useful it is to construct this in conversation.
Okay.
If there's any particular feature you'd like to talk about, but or the meaning of any particular word.
But I guess at least continue on until we get past the dimensions.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which may not be for a while.
And their windows and their arches and their palm trees were after the measure of the gate that looketh toward the east. They went up unto it by 7 steps, and the arches thereof were before them. And the gate of the inner court was over against the gate toward the north and toward the east. And he measured from the gate to the gate 100 cubits. After he brought me toward the south, and behold, a gate toward the south, and he measured the posts thereof and the arches thereof according to these measures. And there were windows in it, and the arches thereof round about, like those windows. The length was 50 cubits, and the breadth 25 cubits. And there were 7 steps to go up to it, and the arches thereof were before them. And it had palm trees, one on this side and one on another, that side, on the posts thereof. And there was a gate in the inner court toward the south, and he measured from the gate to the gate toward the south, and 100 cubits. And he brought me to the inner court by the south gate, and he measured the south gate according to these measures. And the little chambers thereof, and the posts thereof, and the arches thereof, according to the measures. And there were windows in it, and in the arches thereof round about. It was 50 cubits long, 25 cubits broad. And the arches round about were 25 cubits long, and 5 cubits broad. And the arches thereof were toward the utter court, and palm trees were upon the posts thereof. And the going up to it had 8 steps. And he brought to me, and he brought me into the inner court toward the east, and he measured the gate according to measures, and the little chambers thereof, and the posts thereof, and the arches thereof were according to these measures. And there were windows therein, and in the arches thereof round about. It was 20 cubits long, and 25 cubits broad. And the arches thereof were toward the outward court, and palm trees were upon the posts thereof, this side and on that side. And the going up to it had 8 steps. He brought me to the north gate, and measured it according to these measures. The little chambers thereof, the posts thereof, and the arches thereof, and the windows to it round about. The length was 50 cubits, and the breadth 25 cubits. And the posts thereof were toward the utter court, and palm trees were upon the posts thereof. On this side and on that side, going up to it, had 8 steps. And the chambers and the entries thereof were by the posts of the gates, where they washed the burnt offering. In the porch of the gate were 2 tables on this side, and 2 tables on that side, to slay thereon the burnt offering and the sin offering, and the trespass offering. And at the side without, as one goeth up to the entry of the north gate, were 2 tables. And on the other side, which was at the porch of the gate, were 2 tables. 4 tables were on this side, and 4 tables on that side. By the side of the gate, 8 tables. Whereupon they slew their sacrifices. 4 tables were of hewn stone for the burnt offering of the cubit, was burnt offering, of a cubit half long and a cubit and a half broad, and one cubit high, whereupon also they laid instruments wherewith they slew the burnt offering and the sacrifice. And within were hooks, hand broad, fastened round about, and upon the tables was the flesh of the offering. And without the inner gate were the chambers of the singers in the inner court, which was at the side of the north gate. And their prospect was toward the south, one at the side of the east gate, having the prospect toward the north. And he said unto me, this chamber, whose prospect is toward the south, is for the priests, the keepers of the charge house. The chambers, whose prospect is toward the north, for the priests, the keepers of the charge of the altar. These are the sons of Zadok, among the sons of Levi, which come near Yahweh to minister unto him. So he measured the court, 100 cubits long, and 100 cubits broad, 80, in the altar that was before the house. And he brought me to the porch of the house, measured each post of the porch, 5 cubits on this side and 5 cubits on that side, and the breadth of the gate was 3 cubits. On this side, and 3 cubits on that side. The length of the porch was 20 cubits, and the breadth 11 cubits. And he brought me by the steps whereby they went up to it. And there were pillars by the posts, one on this side, and another on that side. 40.
I'm not really into numerology, right? So I'm not going to comment on any of these measurements, how big things are. I don't even know if it's necessary to ever comment on it. I understand that a lot of space is given here to measurements, which we really shouldn't just trivialize the space, in the words of Ezekiel, but I think when we get to chapter 43 and read the first 11 verses, we may understand that this is only an allegory. Even if it seems like a lot of trouble to just make an allegory.
Does this have anything to do with, I could be way off, but is there any correlation to Christ saying that he will go and prepare a place for us? Is this like a vision of that, or am I just way off?
Well, I can't see that for the reason that here we see talk of animal sacrifices. Sin offerings, trespass offerings, which are no longer necessary in Christ.
Okay.
So I could see where you're coming from, but I can't see the need for the sacrifices and offerings. Our sins have been forgiven, and we're no longer in this body of sin at that point. At that point, not at this one, at that point. But for now, Christ is our sacrifice. Christ is our Passover. And he's our only propitiation for sin. So I can't see the need for any future temple to be built with sin offerings and trespass offerings. Or however it was worded here, I'm going to look it up again. Except I have too many S's in trespass. I always do. Verse 39. And the porch of the gate were two tables on this side and two tables on that side to slay thereon, meaning you're killing animals, the burnt offering and the sin offering and the trespass offering. It's weird that sin offering and trespass offering, they're the same word. Sin and trespass are the same word. So I don't really even understand the necessity for that. Trespass is sin. They're both words are from the same Hebrew word, asham, which means to be ashamed. It's an English word now, that Hebrew word. The whole burnt offering and wow, the sin offering and the trespass offering, and it's the same Hebrew word, basically, asham. So I don't see the need for offerings under the new covenant. There's no need for animal sacrifices or offerings under the new covenant. The new covenant, it is completely different than the old covenant, which had failed and which taught us the lesson that we can't possibly justify ourselves with the works of our hands. So that's that. This temple never existed historically, and I think we might see why when we get to chapter 43. In the meantime, we have to suffer through two more chapters of measurements and details that I'm not going to say they're irrelevant. I just don't understand them because they were never. This temple was never built. So if this temple is going to be physically built, why is it going to be built? And the New Testament doesn't explain that. And for what purpose? And why have offerings again? And the New Testament actually tells us that there's no need to have offerings again.
I wonder if it's something that the Jews are going to build, thinking that, you know, to say that they fulfilled scripture somehow.
Yeah, but that's not the way it's presented here in Ezekiel. But Yahweh never told Ezekiel to build this temple. He never commanded anybody to build this temple. If you read verse 4 of chapter 40, and the son of man, and the man said to me, son of man, behold with thine eyes and hear with thine ears and set thine heart upon all that I shall show thee. For to the intent that I might show them unto thee art thou brought hither. In other words, you're brought here for the reason that I show these things unto you. Declare all that thou seest to the house of Israel. So Ezekiel's shown these things, and he's only told to declare them to the house of Israel. He's not told to build them. He's not told to find anybody to build them. He's not told that they would be built. He's only to declare them to the house of Israel. And we'll find out why in chapter 43. But in the meantime, we have two more chapters of descriptions. So it's all kind of tedious and weird, but the whole book of Ezekiel is like that. I mean, the poor guy had to lay on his side for 180 days and on his other side for 40-something days, and just to prove a point to the house of Israel and the house of Judah. So he was put through some tedious, strenuous activity in order to relate his prophecy. He was put through part of that.
So that laying on the side, right? That could be some sort of like an idiom.
What, to lay on your side?
Yeah, that some kind of lost in translation idiom.
I don't know. He wasn't told to go sit in an internet cafe and hang out and drink beer and wow. Lay thou also upon thy left side, and lay the iniquity of the house of Israel upon it according to the number of days that thou shalt lie upon it. Thou shalt bear their iniquity. For I have laid upon thee, I thought it was 180 days. No, I'm wrong. For I have laid upon thee the years of their iniquity according to the number of their days, 390 days. So shalt thou bear the iniquity of the house of Israel. So Ezekiel had to lay on his side for 390 days. And then 40 more days for Judah. He was told to lay upon his right side for 40 days, his left side for 390 in Ezekiel chapter 4. So what all I'm trying to say there is that the entire process of relating the prophecy in Ezekiel was through a very tedious method. And I'm comparing that tediousness with the tediousness that we see here in chapters 40 through 42. And even beyond that, it's carried. Sure, I mean, we should get it out of the way, even if we can't talk a whole lot about it. I mean, I don't have a whole lot to say about the measurements themselves. They are what they are.
So I'll go through the entire chapter then.
Yes, sir.
Ezekiel 41. After he brought me to the temple and measured post 6 cubits broad on the one side and 6 cubits broad on the other side, which was the breadth of the tabernacle. And the breadth of the door was 10 cubits, and the sides of the door were 5 cubits on one side and 5 cubits on the other side. And he measured the length thereof, 40 cubits, and the breadth 20 cubits. Then went he inward and measured the post of the door, 2 cubits, and the door 6 cubits, and the breadth of the door 7 cubits. So he measured the length thereof, 20 cubits, and the breadth 20 cubits, before the temple. And he said unto me, this is the most holy place. And he measured the wall of the house cubits, and the breadth, every side chamber, 4 cubits, round about the house on every side. And the side chambers were 3, one over another, and 30 in order, and they entered into the wall which was of the house for the side chambers round about, that they might have hold, but they had not hold in the wall of the house. And there was an enlarging and a winding about, so upward from your channel, to the side chambers. For the winding about of the house went still upward, round about the house. Therefore, user the breadth of the house was still upward, and so increased from the lowest chamber to the highest by the midst. I saw also the height of the house round about. Foundations of the side chambers were a full reed of 6 great cubits. The thickness of the wall, which was for the side chamber without, was 5 cubits. That which was left was the place of the side chambers that were within. And between the chambers was the wideness of 20 cubits. Round about the house on every side. And the doors of the side chambers were toward the place that was left, one door toward the north, and another door toward the south. And the breadth of the place that was left was 5 cubits round about. Now the building that was before the separate place at the end toward the west was 70 cubits broad. And the wall of the building was 5 cubits thick, round about, and the length thereof 90 cubits. So he measured the house 100 cubits long, and the separate place, and the building with the walls thereof 100 cubits long. Also the breadth of the face of the house, and of the separate place toward the east 100 cubits. And he measured the length of the building over against the separate place, which was behind it, and the galleries thereof on one side and the other side, 100 cubits, with the inner temple and the porches of the court. The doorposts and the narrow windows and the galleries round about on their three stories, over against the door, sealed with wood, round about and from the ground up to the windows, and the windows were covered. To that above door, even unto the inner house and without, by all the wall round about, within and without, by measure. And it was made with cherubims and palm trees, so that palm tree was between a cherub and a cherub, every cherub had 2 faces. So the face of a man was toward the palm tree on the one side, and the face of a young lion for the palm tree on the other side. And it was made through all the house round about, from the ground unto above the door, were cherubims and palm trees made, and on the wall of the temple. The posts of the temple were squared, and the face of the sanctuary, the appearance of the one as the appearance of the other. The altar of wood was 3 cubits high, and the length thereof 2 cubits, and the corners thereof, and the length thereof, and the walls thereof were of wood. And he said unto me, This is the table that is before Yahweh. And the temple was a sanctuary, had two doors. And the doors had two leaves apiece. Two leaves for the one door, and two leaves for the other door. And there were made on them, on the doors of the temple, cherubims and palm trees, like as were made upon the walls. There were thick planks upon the face of the porch without. And there were narrow windows, palm trees, on the one side and on the other side, on the sides of the porch and on the sides of the chambers of the house, and thick planks. End of Ezekiel 41.
Well, likewise, there's a whole lot of details I really can't discuss here. I really don't know about, right? Like why certain chambers at certain sizes, or there's a certain number of them. But basically, to me, that cherub, the most interesting thing in this chapter is the description of the cherub, where it has two faces, that of a man and that of a lion. And of course, Yahshua Christ is the lion of the tribe of Judah. That kind of harkens back to what Herbnerz had said earlier. So even if I can't accept that this temple is going to be physically built because of its sacrifices and things like that, that are no longer necessary, in any event, the cherub is interesting. That it has the face of a man and the face of a lion. That's interesting to me. Because that, to me, does point to Christ.
Yes, and it kind of points to the previous chapters talking about the sticks coming together with Israel and the house of Judah. Doesn't it?
Yeah, back in 37. It might evoke that. If you're just sitting and reading through Ezekiel. But I don't think this temple is ever going to be built, and it's never been built. I think chapter 43 explains that, so we'll get there when we get to 43.
42?
Chapter 42 is just more measurements, and it's tedious. Unless you're an architect and understand the language and can sit and reconstruct it, it's tedious to me.
It's the Aryan nature, Bill. It's the Aryan spirit. We're exact like the Germans. So we've got all these measurements in our Bible. That's the Aryan spirit.
It is. I can understand that. I mean, it's the engineer in each of us to actually want to construct something according to a plan. The Germans, I think, among us today are most famous for that, yeah. But I'm a quarter Irish, and that fucks all that up.
Yeah, I don't know. I think they'd be good, too.
They're not the same engineers as the Germans are, I'm sorry.
Henry Ford was an Irishman. Family was from Cork.
Okay. The Irish just aren't as famous for engineering as the Germans are. I'm sorry, they're not.
They also, who was it? It was, and also it was an Irishman that was the architect for the White House.
He was a Mason, though. He was in on a conspiracy.
Likely.
I'm kidding.
42?
Yes, sir. Let's get past this. Maybe we'll get to 43 tonight. 42 is not too long.
Ezekiel 42. Then he brought me forth into the utter court, the way toward the north, and he brought me into the chamber that was over against the separate place, and which was before the building toward the north. Before the length of 100 cubits was north door, and the breadth was 50 cubits. Over against the 20 cubits, which were the inner court, and over against the pavement, which was for the utter court, I'm guessing utter means outer, was gallery against gallery in three stories. And before the chambers was a walk of 10 cubits breadth, inward in a way of 1 cubit, and their doors toward the north. And the upper chambers were shorter, for the galleries were higher than these. And the lower, and then the middlemost of the building. For they were in three stories, but had not pillars, as the pillars of the courts. Therefore, the building was straightened more than the lowest and the middlemost from the ground. And the walls that was without, over against the chambers, toward the utter court, on the fore part of the chambers, the length thereof was 50 cubits. For the length of the chambers that were in the utter court was 50 cubits. And lo, before the temple were 100 cubits. And from under these chambers was the entry on the east side, as one goeth into them from the utter court. The chambers were in the thickness of the wall of the court toward the east, over against the separate place, and over against the building. And the way before them was like the appearance of the chambers which were toward the north, as long as they, and as broad as they. And all the goings out were both according to their fashion and according to their doors. And according to the doors of the chambers that were toward the south was a door in the head of the way, even the way directly before the wall toward the east, as one entereth into them. Then said he unto me, the north chambers and the south chambers, which are before, thee, separate place, they be holy chambers, where the priests that approach unto Yahweh shall eat, and most holy things there shall they lay, the most holy things, and the meat offering, and the sin offerings, and the trespass offerings, for the place is holy. And the priests enter therein. Then shall they not go out of the holy place into their utter court, but there they shall lay their garments, wherein they minister, for they are holy. And they shall put on other garments, and shall approach to those things which are for the people. Now, when he had made an end of measuring the inner house, he brought me forth toward the gate, where the gate, whose prospect is toward the east, and measured it round about. He measured the east side of the measuring reed, 500 reeds with the measuring reed round about. He measured the north side, 500 reeds with the measuring reed round about. He measured the south side. He measured the south side, 500 reeds, with the measuring reed. He turned about to the west side and measured 500 reeds, measuring reed. He measured it by the four sides. Had a wall round about 500 reeds long, 500 reeds broad, to make separation between the sanctuary and the profane place. End of Ezekiel 42.
So God separates the profane and the holy.
So I'm guessing that the profane would be outside of the utter court or the outer court.
Is it the public area of the temple, or is it outside the temple? Hold on.
Because the sanctuary would comprise the inner court and the outer court. And then outside of that, I would presume it would be the profane.
Well, right. It's okay. The outer court is for the profane, and only the holy can enter into the inner court. And Solomon's temple was also, it had a court of the Gentiles. Solomon's temple, as they distinguish it, a court of the nations. It was a court of the people in general, where only certain people, only priests, could come into the inner court of the temple. Once again, I don't think this temple will ever be built. It's never been built in history. It will never be built, and it's not supposed to be built. And in the Christian period, it's contrary to the spirit of Christianity and everything we're told about the fulfillment of the Old Testament, the end of the sacrifices, the end of the oblations, and the end of the sacrifices is very explicit in Daniel, and the breaking of the old covenant is very explicit in Zechariah. So I don't see how this temple is ever going to be built, except for the purpose that I said, that it must be to shame the children of Israel for their sins, which I hope is made evident in the first 11 verses of Ezekiel chapter 43. So we've had three chapters of very, I'll continue to describe them as tedious, of very tedious descriptions for a temple that's never going to exist. I think what was more important was the impact that Ezekiel was making or that was intended to be made when he was told to announce these things to the children of Israel at the beginning of chapter 40. Where these measurements had begun.
Yeah, it would have been way more significant to the Israelites at the time.
Yeah.
Having this temple described to them.
Yes, so very shortly after the temple in Jerusalem had been destroyed. So in my last Revelation commentary, I quoted the first 11 verses of Ezekiel, and I prefaced that quotation with the words that in Ezekiel chapter 43, we may perceive that the entire temple is indeed an allegory where the prophet wrote and said, and then I repeated the first 11 verses of Ezekiel 43 that we're about to encounter here. And I'll leave it at that for now, but y'all can read it for yourself and see if it holds true, which we're about to do.
Ezekiel 43. Afterward, he brought me to the gate, even the gate that looketh toward the east. And behold, the glory of Yahweh of Israel came from the way of the east, and his voice was like a noise of many waters, and the earth shined with his glory. And it was according to the appearance of the vision which I saw, even according to the vision that I saw when I came to destroy the city. The visions were like the vision that I saw by the river Chebar, and I fell upon my face. And the glory of Yahweh came into the house by the way of the gate, whose prospect is toward the east. So the Spirit took me up and brought me into the inner court, and behold, the glory of Yahweh filled the house. And I heard him speaking unto me out of the house, and the man stood by me. And he said unto me, Son of man, the place of my throne in the place of the soles of my feet where I will dwell in the midst of the children of Israel forever, and my holy name shall the house of Israel no more defile, neither they nor their kings by their whoredom, nor by the carcasses of their kings in their high places. In their setting of their threshold, by my thresholds, and their posts, in their post by my post, and the wall between me and them, they have even defiled my holy name. By their abominations that they have committed, wherefore I have consumed them in mine anger. Now let them put away their whoredom and the carcasses of their kings far from me, and I will dwell in the midst of them forever. Thou son of man, show the house to the house of Israel, that they may be ashamed of their iniquities, and let them measure the pattern. Verse 10.
Go one more.
Verse 11. And if they be ashamed of all that they have done, show them the form of the house, and the fashion thereof, and the goings out thereof, and the comings in thereof, and all the forms thereof, all the ordinances thereof, and all the forms, and all the forms thereof, and all the laws thereof, and write it in their sight, that they may keep the whole form thereof, and all the ordinances thereof, and do them.
And right here, Ezekiel's told to take this description of this temple and present it to the children of Israel as a challenge. It's a challenge to the children of Israel if they're ashamed of all the sins that they had done. For which reason they were deported, and for which reason Samaria and Jerusalem were destroyed, and the entire old kingdom was demolished. So we can't, Ezekiel must have presented this to at least a good portion of the children of Israel in captivity. We cannot know what their reaction was, because that's outside of the scope of recorded history. But we can know that when Ezra and Zerubbabel and Nehemiah returned to Jerusalem, 60 or 70 years after this was written, that this temple is not the temple that was built. The temple that was built was only a shadow of the grandeur of this temple that's described here. And I went to length in my Revelation commentary on Revelation chapter 22 to describe that. All I wrote in response to these verses, and I'm going to repeat it here, is that the plan of Ezekiel's temple is made, and these verses that you just read, I believe, establish that, in order to shame the children of Israel for their sins, and it was presented as an opportunity for their repentance and a continued relationship with Yahweh under the old covenant, because the temple in Jerusalem had already been destroyed. Now, once we understand that this challenge was made by Ezekiel to the children of Israel during Ezekiel's lifetime, the announcement that the old covenant was done away with by Yahweh, was abolished by Yahweh, did not come until the time of Zechariah, which is about 60 or 70 years after this. At least 60 or 70 years after this challenge. So with that, the prophet proceeded with further detailed descriptions of an altar and a priest who would make sacrifices for sin offerings in order that Yahweh may once again accept the people. But since, and that's going to follow in the verses to come, but since Ezekiel's temple had never been built, it is evident that the opportunity to continue under the old covenant was lost. And that covenant was announced permanently and irrevocably broken in Zechariah chapter 11, even as Zerubbabel's temple was being built. Then, since the people were ultimately forgiven their sins and offered a new covenant in Christ, therefore we cannot expect or even accept that the Ezekiel temple should exist either now or in the future. It is an allegorical temple which demonstrates the failures of the people in the past to live up to any aspect of the old covenant which they had agreed to at Sinai, and therefore it also exhibits the fact that they could never be justified by their own doings. They could never save themselves. And Ezekiel's temple, because it had never been built, is a monument to that fact. That's how I saw it last year when I wrote that, and that's how I see it now. Only God could save us. And like Joe had said also, that this was a lot more relevant to the people of Israel in Ezekiel's time than it is today. In the city of God, in Revelation chapter 21 and verse 22, it explains that the temple is the Lamb, meaning Yahshua Christ. In the New Testament and in the period of restoration that we still await, the New Testament, the temple is the Lamb. The temple is Christ, just like we see in Ezekiel chapter 37. In the end of it, in verses 26 through 28, the tabernacle set among the people of Israel is Christ. So Ezekiel's temple was never built, and it was never intended to be built. And if the Jews try to build it, then they're just pulling another charade, right?
I don't think they could build something like that. It's Aryan spirit. They're a bunch of mongrels. Can't do anything right. If they build a temple, it'll be ugly.
Yeah, you're right. It would probably convert it into some kind of ugly, square, offset, crooked, modern architecture that never seems to line up.
It'd be like the Catholic Church. The whole church would revolve around transgenderism, just like today with the Catholic Church. The whole church revolves around trannies. So that's the Jewish church. It'd be ugly. It'd be full of all sorts of uncleanness. No beauty to it. You know, beauty is just a social construct, so they don't need beauty, apparently.
I really think just about all modern architecture is ugly.
Yeah. Yeah, when you see some of those old buildings, definitely.
We've seen new houses, multi-million dollar houses being built on a beach down here, and there's some kind of weird futuristic modern architecture, and they look like shit. They might be functional on the inside, but they're totally ugly and dysfunctional on the outside.
They're probably green and sustainable and all this other stuff to explain why it's so ugly and doesn't work. Some sort of cope. Hey, Bill, is that called dispensationalism when you have... Does that mean that God has a different message as, like, time goes on? Is that what dispensationalism is?
Yeah, you know, even I've used the term dispensation, but I've used it in a totally different sense. The way Clifton used that term dispensationalism, and I believe that's the way that some Protestant theologians use it, and that's why Clifton used it in that manner. Their concept of dispensationalism was that God deals with all different kinds of people, like with all men or everybody or every like tribe on a planet, right? In different ways at different times, because he loves everybody, but like in this covenant period, he picked the Jews, and now in our modern covenant period, he picked the Gentiles. It's just dispensationalism to them, where God operates through different groups of people at diverse times.
But the truth of what we have here is that God's message is always the one people, but it might be a different message because of the time. It's always the same people, though, because here we have a different message because they were under a different covenant. You know, right. it's a kind of dispensationalism, but it's not a universalist dispensationalism, I guess.
Right, and that's the sense I use the term. I use the term dispensational in that manner on occasion, that the dispensation of the Old Testament was that the children of Israel operate under a priesthood that dispenses sacrifices and they atone for their sins through those sacrifices, or they propitiate those sins through their sacrifices, where in the New Testament we have a dispensation where the children of Israel have their propitiation in Christ. But no, the people don't change. That's evil to think that the people changed. The people never change at all, because the promises are only to those one people, whether it's Old Testament or New. So dispensationalism, the way the Protestant theologians use it, is evil, and it's universalist, and it basically denies the essence of the covenants of God rather than embracing them. But I've used that word dispensation a few times and purposely in a different sense. Because I'm not going to let the Protestants steal an otherwise sound English word.
Verse 12.
I actually had that word a few times in my search results. Just one second, Martin. 40. 50. 52 times, Joe. They're not all me, but they're mostly me. Okay, but that's always in a different sense than the common Protestant theologians that stole the world word and screwed it all up on purpose. Okay. Martin, what you waiting for? No, I'm kidding.
Verse 12. This is the law of the house. On this top of the mountain, the whole limit thereof, round about, shall be most holy. Behold, this is the law of the house. And these are the measures of the altar. After the cubits, cubit is a cubit, and the hand breadth. The bottom shall be a cubit, and the breadth a cubit. And the border thereof, by the edge thereof, round about, shall be a span. And this shall be the higher place of the altar. And from the bottom upon the ground, even to the lower settle, shall be 2 cubits, and the breadth 1 cubit. And from the lesser settle, even to the greater settle, shall be 4 cubits, and the breadth 1 cubit. So the altar shall be 4 cubits, and from the altar and upward shall be 4 horns. And the altar shall be 12 cubits long, 12 broad, square in the 4 squares thereof. And the settle shall be 14 cubits long, 14 broad, in the 4 square thereof. And the broader about it shall be 1/2 cubit, and the bottom thereof shall be 1 cubit about. And this and his stairs shall look toward the east. And he said unto me, Son of man, thus saith Yahweh God. These are the ordinances of the altar. In the day when they shall make it to offer burnt offerings thereon and to sprinkle blood thereon, thou shalt give to the priests, the Levites, that of the seed of Zadok, approach unto me, minister unto me, saith Yahweh God, a young bullock for a sin offering. And thou shalt take of the blood thereof, and put it on the four horns of it, and on the four corners of the settle, and upon the border round about. Thus shalt thou cleanse and purge it. Thou shalt take the bullock also of the sin offering, and he shall burn it in the appointed place of the house without the sanctuary. And on the second day thou shalt offer a kid of the goats without blemish for a sin offering, and they shall cleanse the altar as they did cleanse it bullock. When thou hast made an end of cleaning it, thou shalt offer a young bullock without blemish and a ram out of the flock without blemish. And thou shalt offer them before Yahweh, and the priest shall cast salt upon them, and they shall offer them up for a burnt offering unto Yahweh. 7 days shalt thou prepare, every day a goat for sin offering. They shall also prepare a young bullock and a ram out of the flock without blemish. 7 days shall they purge the altar and purify it. They shall consecrate themselves. And when these days are expired, it shall be that upon the eighth day and so forth, the priest shall make your burnt offerings upon the altar and your peace offerings, and I will accept you, saith the Lord Yahweh. End of verse 43. End of chapter 43.
End of chapter 43. Yeah, right. And I'm going to say the same thing, that this is contingent on the reaction of the children of Israel, where we read in verses 10 and 11, Son of man, show the house, meaning this temple, to the house of Israel, that they may be ashamed of their iniquities. And if they be, and I'm skipping a little, and if they be ashamed of all that they have done, show them the form of the house and the fashion thereof, and write it in their sight, and all the laws thereof, and write it in their sight, that they may keep the whole form thereof, and all the ordinance thereof, and do them. And they never did this, right? Whatever Ezekiel showed the children of Israel in the dispersion, in the captivity, they never did it in the captivity. So they had that plan, that temple, they were made this offering, and they never accepted it, evidently. And to me, this is just a lesson. It's a long lesson and a tedious lesson, but it's just a lesson that we're never going to save ourselves. It's futile. If Yahweh God offers us the opportunity, we're still going to fail to accept it, and we're not going to do it. It's futile. We can't save ourselves. That, to me, is the lesson here in Ezekiel, in these final chapters.
Like, Yahweh offered them a path to return to him and to purify themselves, and they would have to do it by their own actions, but they couldn't do it by their own actions.
Right. And this is the path, and they failed.
Yeah. I see that too. I see what you're saying. It's like, here are your sins, and here's a way to return to me if you want to do it. If you really want to return to me, you know, like, rent your heart and return to me. And they didn't.
Right. Too hard, they would have had to build that temple. Too hard to do it. That's the way I see these chapters. And we were doomed to fail. We were destined to fail. I understand that. But they failed. They didn't take him up on it.
this temple may not have been built, but like you're saying, the lamb is going to be, the lamb temple is going to be built. You can't stop that temple.
Right.
Unstoppable.
Right, because anything that's put in the hands of man like this is going to be a failure. You'll have to excuse me for a moment. I think we should probably leave 44 for next week, to be honest with you. But we got a total of five chapters left. I don't know. Yeah, you'll have to excuse me. I have to run to the boys' room.